This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with Al Bloomer, 96 years old, of Fresno, California. It is not the first time his World War II service has been discussed on the airwaves. You'll notice it sounds a little scratchy, but Al still has a 78 RPM phonograph copy of a broadcast on KCOK radio welcoming him home after the war and describing some of his exploits.
He was on one of the Navy's largest aircraft carriers, the USS Enterprise. His ship was due in Pearl Harbor that day, but was delayed by storms at sea.
If you'd like to hear that entire recording, it's included on the podcast edition of this episode at hometownheroesradio.com. But let's pick up the story right there on December 7th, 1941, with 18-year-old Al Bloomer and the first ship to be awarded a presidential unit citation, the Big E.
And when we got in about 100 or so miles out from Pearl, we launched aircraft to go into Pearl Harbor and make arrangements for tie up the ship and that. Of course, we had the inner air patrol going all the time during that period of time. We was prepared for war while we was out, but you know, in peacetime, you had to put the ammunition all down below when you go in the port and that for some unknown reason. But that is the only time after the war started we never did. We launched them, and then we finally got word that the Japanese was attacking Pearl Harbor. Well, lo and behold, and that started it, and we had to bring up all ammunition again, and we was ready for war when we got the notice. It sure changed the life on the ship, I'll tell you that. We launched those aircraft, and when they got in there, they attacked those SBDs and so forth, and they shot down a couple of them, and one of them, the guy survived on it. Gonzalez was his name. It's another story. We stayed at general quarters that whole day, prepared for war. During that period I was on the Enterprise, I was a trainer on a 5-inch 38 gun. That gun would shoot a projectile, weighed about 52 pounds, 10 miles. The powder case weighs about 25 pounds. It's a semi-fixed ammunition. And on this gun, it takes 8 people to man it. And that's not counting your shell carriers and your powder carriers that come out from below to put it on the different positions on the gun. Now, the Enterprise thought that they knew where the Japanese was when they were attacking it, and then we launched all aircraft. But lo and behold, they never found them. So they had to return, and a lot of them came in, and it was still kind of dark, and they had to land at nighttime. Well, most of them on board there was kind of experienced at doing that because the Navy knew that was coming. And also they launched those old TBS, and those were the old torpedo planes. I think they only could do about 150 miles an hour. And then they had that torpedo that hung down below underneath them. They finally landed them with them on, and this is the first time that this ever happened. So that was an experience in itself because they didn't know if they'd fall off or what. They'd go, you know. But anyway, we got everything aboard. We secured for general quarters after dark.
What about when you learned, when you were made aware of the magnitude of the attack on Pearl Harbor, the amount of damage that had been inflicted?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. We came in there the next day around 4 o'clock, and we come up the channel there, and of course, you know, I think it was the Nevada, the only one of the battleships that got underway there. He got halfway out the channel, and then they was bombing it, and they knew they wasn't going to make it out, so they backed that thing up and beached it so they wouldn't plug up the counter. And it was started smoking when we came in. And as we came up through the channel there, they had the gun emplacements they built. And the guy says, "Where in the hell have you guys been?" And they all made us number one, you know. They were mad at us because we didn't help them. Well, we did what we could do, but they never knew. So we went in and we pulled around. We went around and I seen all those battleships burning, and some of them were still burning, and smoking them in Oklahoma upside down. And then, of course, you seen the Arizona. It was bent over part of the superstructure and that before they took it all off and everything. But anyway, it was a mess. And, of course, you know, one of the destroyers that was in the dry dock across there, the bomb hit the bow of it and blew it off. I did know the name, but I can't remember it right now. And
the Shaw, maybe?
Yeah, I think it was the Shaw. Yeah, right. Yeah, we tied up ahead of where the pier was, and then a tanker pulled up alongside of us, and they pumped us full of oil and gas and everything that we needed. At that time, too, we was under condition, too. We had the guns manned all night because we never knew if they were coming in or not. And about 4 o'clock that next morning, we got underway again because we didn't want to get caught. That we didn't know if there was going to make another strike or not the next day like that. So we went outside there and did some patrol work. We heard rumors that some guy says, hey, a carrier come in there. So they go out there and look, and there ain't no carrier in here. What are you guys talking about? And so they finally nicknamed us the Galloping Ghost of the Wahoo Coast Carrier. So we thought that was funny. But anyway, we cruised back there, and some of the different ships that got out, they joined up with us and everything to make a task force. In those days, the task force wasn't as big as they were later on in the war. I remember before we started making raids or battles, that usually we had a couple heavy cruisers and some destroyers with us, and there's about 6 of destroyers and a cruiser. After we got kind of organized and we made a couple raids, we went and raided Wake Island, and what we would do, try to sneak in on them, and then we would, early in that morning, when we was in so many miles of it, we'd launch all our aircraft to make a raid on them, and then we'd turn around and run off, and they had to catch up. Well, we didn't lose hardly any aircraft. I don't think that one we didn't lose any. And then we started to come back here, and we got orders, well, while you guys are out there, why don't you go down there and hit Marcus Island? And it was about 1,000 miles, I think. It was only from Japan. I said, my God. So we'd go down there and sneak in on them, and here again, we'd be launching all our aircraft again, and as soon as we'd launch those aircraft, we'd get the hell out of there, and they had to catch up to you. I think that raid, we only lost one, but that was kind of our tactic, and then we'd go back to Pearl and get ready for our next one.
And what were you doing this whole time?
Well, first of all, in the deck division, in peacetime, they put me in washing the officers' quarters, and I said, I ain't going to do this all day long, and had inspection, that guy come by with the white gloves and see if he could find a little dust there so he could put you on a report or something, you know. And then they said, well, we need a gunner strike. Anybody want? I raised my hand. I do. I want to get out of that. So I got assigned to take care of that 5-inch I was on and make sure it works, and you shine it up, and then you clean the different joints and everything so they wouldn't get rusty. And, you know, you kind of horse around a little bit. You didn't work hard, but, you know, that was part of your duty. For general quarters, you know, I was a trainer on it. Being a trainer on it, I got out of a lot of duty. In fact, I never did have to do mess duty at all. They did get some old guy, as kind of a goofball old guy, and put him on that. But anyway, I had a pretty easy, be truthful with you guys on it. The only thing is, you're going to get in trouble one of these days. Not that trouble, but I mean in war.
And the Enterprise would have plenty of that. I'm curious, though, when you say you were the trainer on that 5-inch 38, how often would you have to perform that duty? How often were those guns firing?
Well, mostly target practice are only when you're under attack. When they put me, the first time I was on a trainer on that thing, we was a practice there, and they said, yeah, you get on there and look at those sights there. We're going to put it on their director. I put my eye down there looking at it. Ooh, my God, that thing hit me in the eye there. And I said, oh, like somebody socked me. I said, why in the hell didn't you guys tell me to keep your eye about an inch away from that? Well, I learned the hard way.
I guess so. And you said, you know, action would be coming for the Enterprise. And a few months after Pearl Harbor, about 5 months, you guys were headed toward Tokyo alongside the USS Hornet.
Uh-huh. Well, we went into Pearl there. We was out training or something, you know. The carrier, we never did get to stay in Pearl Harbor very long, like some of these guys on these destroyers. Why, they would send a squadron out with you, and then when they come back in, well, they'd sign you another one, and those guys, they get to have all the good liberty and everything, and we didn't get but one day, and then we're back at sea, either training or doing something. We no peace on the carrier at that time. And then they said, okay, prepare to get underway. And we just said, well, we just came in again. And so out to sea we go. And we didn't know where we was going. And we was out there about the second day. And here come the Hornet with a whole bunch of B-25s on the flight deck. And we said, where in the hell are we going to go with them? How are they going to get off? We never dreamed that they were going to launch it from an at the carrier. But anyway, we kept going, and then the old admiral comes on to the public speaking system. He tells us what we're going to do. He says, we're going to go in within 500 miles of Japan, and we're going to launch these B-25s. And we said, boy. And when we started the day that we was going to launch those things, it was got rough, was going up and down, and so forth. But the day before, that it was so rough, that they decided to leave the destroyers back because they could not keep up with the larger ships going to make a run in to launch those aircraft. And so the smallest ship we had was a light cruiser, and they had the 6-inch guns on it. That's the older style ones. They didn't have the brand new ones like they had now. Anyway, we get there, and about 10 o'clock in the morning or something, I hear gun firing. And then I hear General Quarters, and I said, oh, we're in trouble now. But anyway, that's when they run into these sampans about 650 miles outside of Japan. That light cruiser was shooting them. The dive bombers were trying to bomb them, and the old fighters were trying to strafe them so they wouldn't get the message off. And then pretty soon you ran into another one. I said, oh, boy. And here goes the same old routine again. So they decide to launch the aircraft. They was going to launch them, and the guy's on the gun grip, he says, I'll bet you $20 they don't make it. Yeah, I'll take five of that. You know, and then the guy gambling that. You know there's no gambling on Navy ships. But anyway, that's the way it goes. And we watched them, and they decide to launch. We watched them, and that old Hornet would go up when it hit those waves, goes down. And what they would try to do on the up side, they timed it where the B-25s would take off. And then lo and behold, the first one, of course, was Doolittle himself, and he's a good pilot, man. He roared that thing up, and you could almost see it. And then it moved like that, and it went right on off. And then one of them didn't put his flaps out or something. And we said, uh-oh, he's going in. He's going way down. They couldn't even see him. And we couldn't see him either because the ship. And then all of a sudden, he appeared back up again, every one of them. And I read where it took an hour and 1 minute to launch all those 16 B-25s off of that carrier. And then after that, boy, you know, we turned around and we got out of there as fast as we could. Well, I heard rumors. I don't know how true it is, but I heard they thought we wasn't going to be able to launch those aircraft. They were thinking that we was going to launch our own aircraft, and they had to begin about 100 or 200 miles before you get to Japan, and they were setting up a trap for us. They never dreamed that it was going to be those B-25. But anyway, we got out of there, and we all survived.
And you had the best seat in the house, it sounds like. I mean, this is something that's never, ever happened before in history that a lot of people said was impossible. You guys on your ship are betting they're not going to get off the deck of that Hornet. And you sat there and watched all 16 of those B-25s take off?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I stood on the starboard side there, and I could stand on my 5-inch gun up there, and I could look over there and see them, watch them. They all take off.
When you're watching that, are you wondering what's going to happen to them?
Yeah, I sure did. Of course, I never knew until afterwards. They never told us. And you know, too, on the way back there, that task force, they said, now listen, this is a secret. And they said, if any of you guys say anything about where those B-25s come from, you're going to be put in prison, and you're going to be making big rocks of the little ones the rest of your life. So I want you, and you believe it or not, I never did hear of anybody that told where those came from during my whole time during the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the Navy, until after it was really publicized. And the fact, too, that you didn't even get it put on your record at that time. You never got credit for it. But anyway, things got straightened up later on.
And maybe you remember, maybe you don't. Did it occur to you guys at the time, as you're watching this, that there's no way those guys can return to the carrier, that this is a one-way mission for them?
Yeah, they told us that they were going to go to China there. They got a place where they was going to land. Of course, they never told us all the trouble they're going to have before they got there. But that comes on later.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there would be plenty of trouble in store for the Big E as well. I know you guys went back into Pearl Harbor, but it wasn't long after that, a month or so later, that the Battle of Midway unfolds, and the Enterprise played a crucial role in the Battle of Midway.
Yeah. Before we get to that battle, we made a raid. I want to tell you about the raid on the Marcus and Gilbert Islands. The Hornet was with us, and the Hornet took part of an enemy talk, and we took Kwajalein Island there, and we raided them. This was our first time that we ever did this. We started off early in the morning launching aircraft, and they'd go in, and they held the torpedo plane back, and if they found some ships in the harbor where they launched them, which they did, and some of those started real 5 o'clock in the morning, they launched an aircraft and bombers and fighters and so forth. After they got that raid going and everything, they found some ships in the harbor, so they took the torpedo planes. And some of those torpedo planes, pilots were mad because when they launched the torpedo planes, they hit the ship, but they never exploded. So that was a problem with it. But anyway, that went on all day long until about 4 o'clock. We tried and brought some aircraft back and refueled them, and they made another run. So they decided we had everything pretty well under control because they worked over the airfields and forth like that. We secured from general quarters and went to condition 2, which means half the crew was on the guns, half there, and the other half, they decided to have lunch. And so they relieved them like that. Lo and behold, about an hour later, on the starboard side that I was on, we looked up, and here comes those 6 20-inch bombers heading right for us. And I said, oh, my God. We ran up there, and we jumped. And you know, those things, you didn't have those earphones. All we had was cotton we put in our ears. Well, we didn't get the cotton in my ears, and we got 2 shots off at them. Before they hit us, I mean, they released their bombs, and I said, oh, my God. I thought we were raised in for it. But anyway, they kind of straddled and started a fire on the port side. One of the bombers, he wanted to really get us. He turned around, and he was going to kamikaze the flight deck there. Well, they were shooting at him. There was the SBD sitting on the starboard side there, right by the edge, and he came by, and his wing crashing into the side of the ship there, his wing hit, tore that tail section off of that SBD where that gunner was shooting at him, and went over the side there, started a little fire, and put some holes in the side of the ship and that. But anyway, you could see that in that new movie come out.
I was just going to say, that scene is depicted very powerfully in that movie. So what you saw on the big screen sounds like what you saw in real life?
Yeah, right, yeah.
I imagine that had to be a little surreal. I know we've been focused on your story, but since you brought up the movie, that latest Midway movie, was that surreal to see these events that you lived captured in that kind of fashion on the big screen?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Did they miss anything? Did they leave anything out or take any liberties?
I talked to Jan, said, you know, in the movie they showed them the Japanese were flying down between the battleships. Well, no way. They were close together. You know, that was reproduced anyway. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't do that. Yeah, there's some other spots there, but, you know, that's a movie for you, but there's a lot of real scenes in it.
That new Midway movie is out on video now. Whether you've already seen it or you're going to after hearing Al's story, you can compare what you see on the screen to what you're going to hear from Al when we come back. How did an 18-year-old sailor from Dinuba, California, experience that pivotal World War II battle in the Pacific? We'll find out when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.